artwork can do so many things. It can make a statement, can just hang on a wall and look beautiful. And other times it can even tell stories. Today's guest is a master at world building. He plays a time traveler of sorts, going into this past that is located somewhere between our world and another. A dark fantasy world that has sprouted forth from his very own dreams. Go ahead, put some headphones on and pay attention, because trust me, if you're looking for inspiration, this episode is just what you need. I'm Jacob Johnson, and this is the Mired as Real podcast, a narrative journey into the lives that shape art. Today's episode, Nicholas Bruno. Right after the break. As you may know, this podcast is entirely independent. It is produced, edited, released, everything totally by me, by myself. If you enjoyed this content and would like to hear more stories like this one today, then please consider supporting the show. You can do so by signing up to our Patreon page at patreon.com/myartisreal, or by visiting our website, myartisreal.com, where you can explore and collect artworks or a limited edition prints. During today's episode, we'll be diving into the meticulous craftsmanship behind each of Nicholas Bruno's compelling artworks. In 2021, he successfully raised funding to bring to life an entire tarot card deck showcasing a series of all new works of art. This project, titled Somnia Tarot, is available on his website, somniatarot.com. As a special offer for our listeners, you can enjoy a 10% discount by using the code MYARTISREAL in all caps. Thank you for tuning in. Now back to the episode.
My name is Nicholas Bruno. I'm an artist based in New York, and I create thrilling conceptual photography based on my experiences with sleep paralysis.
Long Island, New York. It's where Nicholas is from and where most of his photography takes place, even to this day.
I actually live in the town that I grew up in. Me and my fiance, we purchased a house in 2022, and luckily I get to stay in the area where I grew up because this is where I create most of my pictures.
Growing up, he wasn't very popular, but Nicholas did have a good group of friends that he is still tight with to this day.
I wasn't necessarily a popular kid in those times, but I had a great group of friends, and we all loved video games. We loved stories of knights and King Arthur, and all of that really lent into the imagination that we had and the games we'd play. You know, there's always just a sense of adventure and something that I really hold dear to my heart and carry through to my practice today, where I'm using my dreams, my nightmares, and everything to influence the work that I create.
And what kind of games were you guys playing?
I had a huge imagination. We always used to go and explore again in the woods and on the coasts of Long Island, where we would pretend to be knights. We'd fight imaginary monsters and such. My mom would make us like tablecloth capes, and we'd have wooden swords, and every time we'd go out, it'd be an adventure. I loved living on Long Island because the landscape is so diverse and you can really create a story wherever you go.
He is still pulling inspiration from these memories and from these areas where they would play and putting them into his photography to this very day.
So when I create a photograph, I often go back to the places that I love to explore as a kid. I'll go to the local beaches, marshlands, deep into the woods, anywhere that really inspired me to create and be imaginative. So I'll go to the places such as Crab Meadow Beach on Long Island or Fuchs Pond in Northport. These are areas that I love to explore, and now I go back to them. I feed off of that energy that I experienced there, and it helps me get in the mindset of how I'm going to create, and also the scenery just lends itself to the imagery that I'm creating.
I know you would play pretend and do a lot of knights fighting dragons and stuff like that. So what sort of movies or games got you interested in those sort of worlds?
I would have to say Lord of the Rings was a huge inspiration for me. Legend of Zelda, especially now too, now that I understand the archetypes and the stories behind all of the series, those really helped me kind of figure out who I was and like gave me a little bit of a mission, especially when I became a teenager and I was really struggling. I loved looking at the story of Link, how he has this coming of age story where he's alone, but he finds this guide he goes through and he tries to save the world through any means that he can, even if it's something as low tech as his slingshot. You know, I could go out there with my camera and try to shape the world. I could try to shape my destiny through creating a photograph and showing that to the world. And maybe that could make an impact too.
We're just a few minutes in and we're already getting pretty deep. But he is absolutely right, because no matter where you are from or what you do, you can still make an impact. Maybe not change the world kind of impact, but you can change your own destiny and hopefully help someone else and help them find their path and figure out what they want to do in life, where they might belong. Nicholas will go on to inspire so many with his works and his camera, but we will learn all about that later. For now, let's understand Nicholas a little more.
As I got older, I loved going hiking and exploring, and then that got me into exploring abandoned buildings. There's a lot of abandoned psych wards near me on Long Island. There's these old farmhouses and such, and I loved going there and finding old documents on the floor, maybe an old skeleton key. And that's where I really started creating my photographs, where I would set up still lifes and photograph them in black and white. And I'd be in these abandoned buildings where all this history used to be, but now it's me in there with my camera creating something completely new.
Why do you think you like exploring? Like, I'd be terrified to explore an abandoned insane asylum. Why do you think you like to explore things like that so much?
I just think it's almost like a time capsule, something that's lost to time. If I can go in there and revive it in a new way through photography, it gives it a new life. And that's something that it's something subconscious in me where I've always wanted to be like a time traveler, go back to medieval times and see what it was like, or the Renaissance era, or the 19th century. They just pique my interest. And there's so much we can learn from the past that we can implement in the present, especially in the world of art. And I love implementing that into my photography.
In case you missed what he had said in his intro, Nicholas suffers from a disorder known as sleep paralysis, which can be experienced very differently for different people. But often you feel almost stuck between being awake and in a dream, unable to move and seeing visions that can be terrifying, especially when you can't seem to move. This had always been an issue for Nicholas, even during his childhood. But as he entered his teenage years and dealt with more life stress, they began to happen almost every single night.
Around 14 or 15 years old, I started experiencing sleep paralysis almost every single night, and my life turned on its head, where I went from a really happy-go-lucky kid to a depressed teenager who was having extreme nightmares every single night. It was a really rough experience for me.
At this time, he was absolutely terrified. He had no clue what was really going on, if what he was seeing at night was real or fake, and had no way to fully explain these feelings to anybody. So, how did it feel that first time? Do you remember the first time you experienced it?
Well, I remember having my first experience, maybe age 5 or 6, where I woke up in my childhood bedroom and I felt a presence next to my bed. I could kind of see a figure there, but I really wasn't sure what was going on. I just dismissed it as another nightmare. I did have terrible nightmares as a kid, but in my teenage years, it became completely different, where I would wake up and there'd be this man in a hat standing above my bed and I can't move and I'm frozen and I feel like I'm gasping for air and I could do nothing but stare at this figure at the foot of my bed. And it would transform into maybe a woman hovering over my bedside and screaming in my ear, or these shadow-like hands grabbing at my throat. And that's when I knew that these are not just regular nightmares and there's something completely different about this.
No one understood and no one could help. And it made Nicholas feel emotionally and physically drained.
I grew up in a Greek Orthodox household, so everything came with a little bit of spirituality, a little bit of information from my great-grandmother who had passed, a lot of superstitions. So I thought I was possessed, or like my house was haunted, because I really couldn't figure out a way to explain it. And it started happening almost every single night. And I told my parents about it. They thought it was a nightmare. I told my friends. They thought I was crazy. So I was kind of just in this cycle of going to sleep, having a terrible nightmare, going to school, being completely drained and not being able to stay awake in class. I was failing a lot of my classes. And that really just set me up for failure because I had no one to really talk to about it.
Nicholas had good parents that didn't dismiss him and tried their best to figure out how they could help.
So my parents always supported me through it, and they did their best to figure out how they could help me. They didn't know there was a sleep disorder, but my mom, being Greek Orthodox, she actually brought a priest to my house when I was in high school, and he came in and did this whole blessing of the house, trying to get rid of any negative energy in the house, because that's, I guess, the first option you go to when you're religious. You try to exercise the bad energy out. She's doing it out of the goodness of her heart. She wasn't trying to upset me or anything, but it was pretty traumatizing because that only really set in like, oh, there has to be a demon in my house. Now if a priest is coming and throwing holy water all over my metal posters on my wall, you know, I love listening to metal music. So he came into my room and splashed all my posters and everything with holy water. And I was like, oh my God, what is going on?
Well, as we know, Nicholas was in fact not being possessed or haunted by some demon. So none of that did anything to really stop the problem. The first thing that actually got him on that path to understanding his disorder was when a teacher recommended he start a dream journal.
It wasn't until I started talking to my art teacher at the time, and he encouraged me to start a dream journal. And by starting this dream journal, I started sketching out what the characters looked like, what I felt like during each dream. And before I knew it, I had a whole anthology of sketches that showcased what was going on with me. And from there, it became the basis to my art project that would later become my career.
He was able to conquer these dreams and visions by facing them head on, not fearing them, but embracing them and trying to understand what he was seeing.
I wasn't going into each experience with complete wonder and mystery. I was going into each one with a little bit more rationale. And I would wake up and look at these characters and try to study what they look like, or maybe try to ask a question and not feed it fear. By doing that, the experiences started to change a lot more, where I can actually be more present in each experience. I still experience sleep paralysis. So I do this in my own practice now, where if I go into an episode, I'm not going to feed the experience fear. I'm going to look around and try to observe as much as I can and bring that back with me to the conscious world and put that into my art.
As we get deeper into Nicholas's story, we will learn exactly how he would turn this disorder into an entire art career. Before it was a career, this way of expression was the path that would lead him to understanding the disorder and finding others just like him.
When I started creating artwork based on these experiences and putting it online, I started getting tons of messages from people all over the world. And they were telling me, hey, I have this too. And you're not possessed by a demon. You have a sleep disorder. And that was just a huge realization for me. I'm like, wait a minute. So I've been going through this for years, not knowing. And there's also thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people going through this too in silence. And at that point, I'm like, I need to keep creating these photographs because people need to know about this. It's not well known that sleep paralysis can happen to pretty much anyone. And we don't know what the general cause is, but I want to bring awareness to it through my artwork.
This breakthrough in this community allowed him and his family to realize he was not alone in this. Other members of the family had actually experienced sleep paralysis at times in the past before.
But then after putting my stuff out online, it gave me the language to talk to my parents about it. And it helped me share what I've been going through with them. And it turns out that my dad's gone through it before. My sister has sleep paralysis as well. And it's something that everyone's really experienced too. And we were able to bond over that. And yeah, you know, it's like if you don't know what you're going through, it becomes this horrible, horrible thing. But if I can go out there, create a photograph that people can see and also learn from, I think that helps out too.
Art can come in many forms. It can be a painting, it can be a digital render, or you can even be making a podcast like I'm doing here. For Nicholas, his art form became photography. The camera was his tool that would allow him to transform his written accounts of his experiences during his sleep paralysis and bring those into real life so that everyone could view and understand what he was going through.
My camera really became my key to understanding myself, the sleep disorder, and pushing forward, because before that, I didn't really have a great outlook on life, but that really gave me a purpose.
So when getting into photography, how did you get that first camera? What sparked that whole journey for you?
When I was a little kid, my mom used to buy me those little disposable cameras that you would do, and you get them developed for me. And I always loved that process. That was a really fun thing for me to do. But photography really became the thing that I love when I was in ninth grade. I joined a digital photography class. And I had already experimented with Photoshop beforehand in middle school. So photography was just the next step. And I fell in love with it. I took my mom's digital camera, explored that, And then I eventually, after creating a bunch of photographs, entered a contest for my high school and I won my first camera. It was sponsored by Nikon, which was pretty cool. So I got my first camera from Nikon, and that was really my key to the art world. And I just kept creating and creating. Later in life, I would end up relinking with Nikon and creating three images based on my sleep paralysis experiences for them to advertise for one of their new cameras. And they've always really been there for me and helped me throughout my journey, which has been really cool.
How did it feel when you won that camera?
It was one of the best days of my life. I was blown away that my name was called, and I went up there. I'm like, I cannot believe this is happening, you know, especially because I was going through such a tough time. Like that was just a huge highlight for me.
And once you got the camera, what was the first art you started to make?
With my first camera, I started creating my first self-portraits. By using that journal that I was creating with my art teacher, I started looking at the characters that I was seeing within my dreams and making some costumes from stuff that I'd find at the thrift store. I would go out on trash day, pick up some old wood furniture, repurpose it, and I would set up my camera on a tripod and I would reenact these scenes of what I would see within my dreams. That process, it's almost like a performance in front of the camera. It helped me not only solidify my photography skills, but just my skills as an artist and being able to tell stories. I had unlimited freedom to go out and just go and create something that never has been created before.
It's not an easy task turning what's in your mind into reality, but the feeling you get when you finally achieve it is beyond anything I can describe to you. On top of that feeling, he also experienced a weight being lifted off of him as he was able to put these visions out there into the world and turn these nightmares into beautiful works of art.
Well, it finally felt like I had a voice, you know? Art is a universal language, and I could take this photograph and put this online and people could see it from all over the world and be able to talk to me. I could translate their messages, you know? Of course, there's so many barriers with language, but with art, I could talk to anybody or communicate a really complex idea through a simple photograph. And there was so much power behind that I was immediately invested once I started creating these pictures.
And these images you create, are they one for one of what you saw or what you have written down in your journal? Or how do you translate what's written into photography?
So when I create a photograph, it either showcases a sleep paralysis experience exactly how I saw it, or it's more of an invention of taking different characters, different feelings, different scenarios, and blending them all into one. So for example, a stereotypical character that many people see across the world has been the Hat Man, the old hag, a floating orb that has a bunch of hands coming out of it, and other different characters that people have documented throughout history. I'll put those into my artwork so people can resonate with those, or I'll actually create photographs that express what it feels like during your waking life when you have sleep paralysis, such as the image that I have where there's an anvil hanging above my head and I'm sitting at this table. And there's a candle burning the rope that's attached to the anvil. It's about to drop onto the character's head, symbolizing anxiety, stress. So I'm telling stories that resonate with the subconscious, resonate with sleep paralysis, and also what it's like to go through depression too.
His works, while surreal and containing heavy influence of Western fantasy, still manage to feel very grounded in reality.
When I create a work, I want it to be a perfect balance between the real and the surreal. I want to ground it in reality, but also have something surreal thrown into there to create intrigue. When you're in sleep paralysis, you're stuck between a dream state and actually being in the real world. And that's what I try to emulate when I create each photograph. When I'm creating pictures, I look at a lot of 19th century painters from the Romantic period. I like to look at the way that they use their color palettes, their styles, how they set up their models. They do a great job of showcasing how you can create an image that speaks a really interesting story and have it also be simple in composition.
Once he started to create these artworks, the place he would share them online was a website called Flickr.
So Flickr was my main place to share my pictures. And I started following other photographers on there and sharing my work with them, talking with them, getting inspired. Through that, I got the attention of the Flickr curators, and they shot my first little video interview. It was called the weekly Flickr, where they would feature an artist each week. And from there, my story kind of blew up for the first time. And I was able to showcase my work to millions of people across the world.
Okay, so you started to grow and kind of grasp what was actually going on and expressing yourself creatively. But when it came to graduating school and moving forward in life and figuring out what you were going to do, what was your plan for that? Was your plan just to continue to make art, follow that path?
In senior year of high school, I immediately knew that I was going to be a photographer. I was heavily invested in creation, building these scenes, and sharing my story. There was no better place to pioneer that than in college. So I chose to go to Purchase College in New York. It was an hour away from my house, and it was up in the woods. It was a new territory to explore, and I knew that there'd be a bunch of different facilities for me to try out. And I went headfirst into it, and I knew I was going to come out successful because my heart and soul went into every single picture that I created.
You had no doubts at all?
Absolutely no doubt.
When I asked Nicholas about having doubts, I was really surprised about that level of confidence he had. But looking back, I don't know why I was so surprised. I mean, I myself had no doubts in art when I was 18 either. Leaving high school ready to take on the world, I knew in my heart that I was going to make something out of art. I was going to do something in this art world. And I have by no means met that goal yet, but it doesn't feel impossible. I think what made me ask that question was, as you get older, you start to have more doubts, more stress, and more responsibilities, and we start seeing the world very differently. Maybe we should teach ourselves to let go of all our newfound worries and embrace that gut feeling we once followed. Because in the end, it's always that level of confidence that will allow you to actually bring those visions in your brain into reality. You know, when it comes to making a living as an artist and a photographer, you have a few paths. For photography, you have commercial photography, you know, people photographing weddings and parties and all that jazz. Then you have the fine art side of making only the art that you want to make with your camera. You know, setting up shots that have stories and meanings. And Nick followed the path of fine art and focused more on honing his craft and doing whatever he felt that he wanted to create. And he just kept chasing that dream.
Throughout college, I focused on creating a portfolio of work that I could later exhibit when I graduated. But for money, what I was doing was I would do internships and I would do side jobs through photography or gardening work sometimes, handyman stuff. I'm a pretty resourceful guy, so I'll explore anything that can help sustain what I do. And throughout college, I worked with an awesome photographer. He kind of showed me the ropes of commercial photography. I learned a lot through him, but I learned also that commercial photography is not for me. I love the fine art world of photography, but he helped me figure out the business side of things and learned how to really market myself, create a social media following, and understand that art is not always art when you have to make a living too, which is the unfortunate part. But I'm glad I had those experiences because it helped me learn a lot of skills that I still apply to this day.
But of course, the art he was making was pretty niche. So sometimes through school, he would feel a little discouraged.
I think the most difficult thing about starting my photography career was the subject matter that I'm creating is deeply personal and it doesn't always resonate with the masses. It's kind of a niche that I'm creating and pioneering. So when I was putting my work out there, especially in college, my professors necessarily wouldn't know how to critique it because it wasn't of the norm or wasn't of, it wasn't reminiscent to the past photographers that we studied or in class. So it was a little discouraging to go through that, but I always knew that there was something behind this and I knew that there was a niche that I could find and place myself in.
In his eyes, he was viewing art school as more of an art camp. He would take all the time he could and use all the resources available to him to learn as much as he could. That way, he'd have a hand in every aspect of the images he created.
Throughout the 4 years, I just spent countless hours in the photo lab, in the wood shop lab, the metal lab. I actually became a metal shop monitor, like where I would go in and have piece of the classroom just so I could go in like after hours and learn how to do metalworking, like blacksmithing, for example. So I just treated it like an art camp rather than really a education where I was learning stuff, but I was also learning on my own because the visual arts building was open 24 hours a day. So I could just go in there 2 a.m. if I have an idea, if I have a dream, I can go in there and start creating something. And then the next morning I can go and shoot it, you know? If you want to create a photograph that's speak the message. You want to have your hand in every part of the image, whether it be through self-portraiture, building the props, making costumes for it, having your friends be a part of it, collaborating. There's just so much more to going out and shooting a simple picture. I always feel more fulfilled when I can tell my story and have different elements that I create by hand and put them into each picture.
It's a beautiful thing when you have passion for something. When you spend so much of your time thinking about that passion and finding any way possible to make it happen. When you have a passion as strong as Nicholas does, you put all you have into it and make the most out of what you have. While his images may look like they are made by a team of people, they are not. Nicholas is a fully independent artist.
My process starts, everything is in camera, where my camera's on a tripod and I'll create a performance in front of the camera. And it's on a timer and it'll shoot every 3 seconds. So I can go out there and become a different character by changing my costume. I can move a prop into a different spot. I can light candles. I can add smoke to the scene, all while my camera is capturing each picture. And then when I go home, I take my memory card and I'll put it into Lightroom, select all the best pictures from the camera roll, and I'll layer them on top of each other. And that gives me my final photograph. It lets me work by myself or maybe with one or two other friends, and I don't have to have a huge production company or actually have to shoot the picture all at once.
And you know, it wouldn't be hard for him to find assets online that he could put into his images and Photoshop together something interesting. But where's the fun in that? Most of the props you see in his images are either found or made by him, and they give the works a more grounded feeling.
So when I choose a prop for a work, it's always going to be using something that's an antique that I find, something on the side of the road that I repurpose, or something that I'll build from scratch. I use props as symbols, and they symbolize different things that you would experience during a dream, such as building a wishing well, or having like an antique steamer trunk, for example, and having maybe fog or smoke coming out of that. When I'm selecting props, I want them to be made of natural materials. I want them to look like they were found in that environment or left there for 100 years and you come and discover them. I really love adding patinas to different props, especially my costumes, where I'll take a dress or an old shirt that I'll make and I'll dip that in marsh mud and then dry that up for a couple days outside. Gets a couple of like spots of mold on there. And that really just adds to the patina and the weathering and the interesting look of each picture.
It must take ages to get one work done, right? I mean, for making the props and shooting the image, about how long does it take for you to create one of these works?
Most of the time I spend is making the props and costumes or figuring out how I'm going to set up each scene. I sketch everything beforehand. It all starts in my dream journal, and I'll pull the rough sketch or the rough writing that I put in there and turn that into a final sketch. That lets me figure out what props I need, what I need to build or make, what location I might go to. And I'll start building and sewing and take everything, pack that up in my Jeep, and I'll drive to the location. My shoots generally, they take maybe 1 to 2 hours, but maybe sometimes it takes 2 to 3 hours of setup time. I have a tide chart on my phone. I can figure out what the tide is going to be at a specific time, check what the weather pattern is going to be, and all of there's lots of moving parts, but it's fun for me. It's a challenge, you know? You obviously do all of this in Photoshop or just cut and paste stock images, but I like to have a challenge when I create my pictures, and I think that's what sets them aside from other ones.
So I know your ideas start out in the dream journal, but when you start to make these works, do you have a full narrative behind it?
I'll tend to write about each photograph after I make it. I don't necessarily write about them before I do it. Everything is coming from my subconscious and it wants to get out. And the best way I can do that is through my photographs. So sometimes I don't even know what I'm saying until I put it into that photograph format, where I can actually look back at some of my older works and being like, wow, I didn't mean to say that, but I did through photograph. Especially after studying tarot, for example, and learning about archetypes and symbols, that really kind of opened my mind to what I was creating in the past too. And it's crazy what comes out through art, you know? You don't even know you're saying it until you know how to analyze it.
I mean, once it's all done, how do you feel when all that work is paid off and you have that final image in front of you?
It's such a sense of relief when I finally hit post and share it to Instagram, or I finally bring it into my printer and print the proof image of that. there's nothing like that feeling, because it's months of preparation. It's dreams that I've had that have stressed me out for years, and I can finally transform them into something tangible that I could put up on the wall and say, yes, I experienced that. And then I reclaimed it through my artwork.
Nicholas's works are deeply personal. They're pulled directly from his own dreams and nightmares and presented to the world all across the internet. It can be very difficult to put something so personal out there, and even more difficult to make an entire career out of that. So eventually you started making money doing art. How did that happen? How did you start making money off these images?
I started earning money for my photography in 2014. I had a few exhibitions after, well, they were local exhibitions, but they were really cool to me. I got to sell some of my prints, especially to people online who had saw my story through Flickr. That's when I kind of knew that this is something that's feasible. Like, I can really go out into the world and explore this, because there was an interest. So at school, I would print my artwork and mail them off to different people. And after I graduated, I went head first and I started doing group shows and eventually my own solo show. And it just, I had a proven track record that I could, one, create a really interesting photograph that people resonated with, and two, there was collectability to it. And that was really helpful for me and reassuring that I can continue to do something that's so deeply personal, but also make a living off it.
I know a lot of artists that actually have a team of people behind them helping them make the art they sell. And on paper, that sounds wonderful, right? You have people you can delegate the boring tasks to so you can focus on all the creative, fun work. But for an artist like Nicholas, where he has a hand in every single aspect of the image, from crafting the props and posing as multiple characters in one shot, would you lose some of that magic if you started delegating? When you look at his images, you totally would think that there's a whole studio behind making this, right? But no, it's not. And I think that's something a lot of people can learn from. Sure, it might take you much longer to create an image all by yourself with no money, but that doesn't mean you can't do it. You can still make amazing art, no matter your resources, no matter your team.
I'm still one guy. I'm an independent artist in studio, but I've definitely come far enough where I can go and take a risk and self-publish something, for example, or go out and create a series of 20 photographs. And I'm not completely terrified that if it fails, that I'm going to be doomed, you know? And I'm still staying resourceful. I still make all my own stuff. I use things that people throw out for free on Craigslist. You know, it's like a very low budget, high output process that I follow. But again, I don't always see the need to have that huge budget Marvel movie sort of set. You know, you can do a lot in your own backyard. Most of the stuff I shoot is maybe 10 minutes from my house. And I always encourage people to go out to their local park or go to, like, for example, a handball court, which is the perfect outdoor studio setup where you can go and create this new photograph right in your own backyard.
When most artists say things like, "I turn depression into art," it normally just means that they used art as a sort of therapy that allowed them to overcome a dark period in their life. What I find so inspiring about Nicholas's story, and what I also find so insane, is that sleep paralysis didn't just spark his desire to make art, but the art he makes is a direct result of the sleep paralysis. It's the result of something he has documented for years in this journal, and not only did they become artworks, but he found a way to make a living off of making them as well. So while, yes, sleep paralysis is still a struggle and an issue for him that he is constantly having to work to overcome, he has truly found the best way to turn it into a positive. You literally took these moments, these sleep paralysis moments, and turned them into images and turned those images into a career.
Correct.
Which is just absolutely insane.
It is a little bit insane, and I take that as a compliment.
It's so cool. I mean, how many other people do you know that have done something to that? Like, people always chase their dreams and do stuff, but to literally take a negative like that and be like, you know what, like, let's turn this into an entire career, make a living off of this.
Honestly, I think it all goes back to being a kid where I love exploring these different territories where the world of sleep paralysis is like, it's like another world. And I get to go in there, figure out things, learn things, turn over rocks and pick things up metaphorically. And it's just something that it's bittersweet. I can go in there and explore. It's really terrifying, but I can bring things back from that world and share them with everybody. It's just an innate subconscious thing that I'm prone to doing.
Besides the fact that your art is therapy for you, how do you feel other people react to it, and how do you feel about it helping others?
I'm so glad that my work resonates with people, even if it's just one random person that saw a picture that they liked of mine. But the people that I really want to reach are the people who are going through a really tough time, especially teenagers who are struggling with sleep paralysis. I've had lots of people from all around the world message me saying that they've been going through a really difficult time with their family because they think they're possessed by a demon. They've done exorcisms and traumatized them and different things like that around the world just because they don't know what sleep paralysis is. And I just hope that my work can reach someone and show them that, hey, that you can use art as a therapy. You can explore this. You can make a song, for example, or a poem or a writing, or you can make photographs like me. And all of those have power. And if we can all band together and use art as that medium, I think we can change the world.
Nicholas is that young kid again that is setting out on adventures, exploring the unknown. But these worlds he is exploring are not just in his imagination. He has turned them into art for all of us to experience and enjoy.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I go into that world, I dive in, observe, explore, come back, and then bring it to the conscious world for everyone to check out. It's been a bittersweet journey, you know?
Art saved Nicholas, and I believe art saved me as well. I was a very depressed kid who found a community through art that made me feel like I was not so different, and that somewhere in this world, I belonged. Art can be therapy. Art can be a language. And art can bring us together. Thank you for listening to yet another episode of this podcast. I was very excited to make this episode. I've been a fan of Nicholas for so long, and to be able to dive deeper into his story gives me a whole new way of viewing his works, and I hope this podcast, for all of you listening, can do the same. While I do believe the artist might not have a direct reason for making certain works, I do believe that the subconscious plays a huge role whether we want it to or not. And once we dig deep enough, we start to uncover what it is that actually influences the art that we enjoy. If you enjoyed this episode, do me one thing. Do one thing for me. Tell everyone you know to come listen. I don't mean tell your artist friends. I mean tell everyone you know. Just like our guest today, I'm one person. I'm a one-man team, and your support is the fuel that I need to keep this podcast going and to improve as we go along. Don't forget, if you want to support us even further and get something in return, we do have prints and artworks available to purchase on our website, MyArtIsReal.com, and even more bonus content coming to our Patreon page at patreon.com/MyArtIsReal. Thank you for listening, and I will see you in the next episode.